Hey, everybody, this is Stelly Efty.
And this is Heaton Shaw. And today on the Startup Chat, we're going to talk about startup fraud.
I think we like talking about more than just sales and marketing.
We just want to bullshit and chat about business and life. And hopefully, while we're doing that, provide a lot of value to people.
The world's best business podcast.
Oh, shit. We got it.
For people trying to get shit done.
Yeah. We don't want to give you feedback that's bullshit.
Yeah, we want you to do your best.
So Stelly, I know you have a story. What's up?
Yeah. So specifically, we're going to talk about what happens if somebody in your startup, somebody that you hired that works with you, is doing some shady shit, right? Is doing things that they're not supposed to do and, you know, stealing money from you or your customers or just lying in one way or another. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on like what to do to prevent this, how to notice it, what to do when you notice it. But I have a story that really sparked this. So the way that we've built Closeout is different in one very specific way to many other CRMs, in which that we have like a huge amount of transparency with our system. So anybody within an organization that uses Closeout can see kind of transparently all communication that happens with a prospect or a customer, all email communications, all calls, recordings, everything is one place. So quite frequently we'll get a customer that tells us that they found a sales rep that did something they weren't supposed to do. And the only way and reason why they noticed it is because of this level of transparency. And recently we got one of the most shocking examples of this. So a Closeout customer in a startup that goes through, I think, Techstars right now in New York City, they had hired a sales rep, and that sales rep's job was to schedule demo calls for the founder. And the idea was to call marketing agencies and set up calls with like a head of marketing there or something. And so the founder noticed a bunch of weird stuff. And eventually he looked a little bit deeper, and he could see in the timeline communication between that sales rep and the prospect that, you know, the prospect would be like whatever Bob at this big agency company, but the email communication would be some random Bob email at Hotmail or at Yahoo Mail or something, not the real agency corporate email. And then when he would start to listen to these calls sounded really weird. In a sense, he got like the suspicion that the sales rep was actually like talking to himself on these calls, like calling a fake number and then using a voice distorter to talk to himself and pretend this is a prospecting call to set up a demo. So he started listening to a number of different call recordings, and the prospect always sounded the same. And then he noticed that when he some of these demos that the sales rep had set up for him, when he would talk to that, you know, quote unquote Bob from marketing agency X, the person would sound super young and would be totally unknowledgeable about agencies or marketing, and would sound nothing like the person on the recordings that the sales rep had pretend to be Bob. So a lot of weird stuff, you know, and he was like collecting more and more evidence. Eventually he came to the conclusion that this rep was faking activity, was faking calls and faking demo schedules, and then would have friends of his pretend to be these people to do these demo calls with the founder because he was paid on a per demo scheduled basis, which is pretty wild. And he confronted the sales rep, and it turned out that that was accurate, right? And it kind of blew his mind. And thankfully, like, it sucks to have to go through something like this where you wasted a ton of time doing demos that were fake and paying somebody that wasn't deserved to be paid money and wasting time training and coaching somebody and all that. The only good news here is that I think he picked this up pretty quickly. So this was not going on for like months, but just for a few weeks. Obviously, it still sucks when this happens. So I don't know. I'm just curious to hear if you have some stories like this, how to prevent these things from happening. Just chit-chatting with you a little bit about it, because I have some other stories as well to share some thoughts. But I'd love to hear your reaction on this specific case. Have you ever heard something as crazy as this with like a voice distorter and all this shit?
It's super difficult in a startup to kind of, you know, on one hand, you want to trust the people you hire. On the other hand, like, you want to make sure they're not doing anything like this. And you might not even think about it when you hire them because, you know, you hired them and you have some level of trust because you hired them. So to me, like, yeah, I've heard lots of weird stuff. This one's like pretty extreme, I would say. It's like funky.
Yeah.
It's like, in my opinion, your company, your startup, if you're a founder, CEO even, it's your brand. It's such a big deal to you. Mm. It's like an important aspect of your identity. I'm not saying it is your identity, although, you know, we could argue about that or have a podcast on that. I know you agree with me on whatever I'm thinking on that. But, you know, and we've talked about this a little bit, like startups are not your baby because they aren't or babies. So I would say that like the line that comes in my head is trust but verify.
Mm-hmm.
So when you hire someone to do a core process early on in your business, you want to make sure that you can trust them. And you don't know them most of the time. So if you don't know them, you already know you can't trust them. They're not like your best friend, or they're not like highly recommended. Even if they're highly recommended, sometimes they do weird stuff. You create systems early on so you can start verifying as you trust them. So in this case, like calls should have been recorded, and you might have sat in on those calls initially, mm-hmm. Really understood what the person was sending. The only reason is like, on one hand, some people might think I'm crazy and say, oh, but you're like micromanaging. It's like, well, actually, I just want to learn. I want to make sure that if this is an area I don't have visibility on and someone new starting and I don't know how it works, or like I've been doing it and I want to make sure it's done a certain way, why wouldn't I want to look at it? Why wouldn't I want to like hop in on the calls and understand what's going on? And then over time, you can build that trust. So I think a lot of the relationship of somebody joining your company and yourself and the whole company as a whole is a process of building trust. And that comes in different aspects depending on the role.
I totally agree. So I love the trust but verify, right? Because this is exactly what I had in mind when I heard the story. And the way that I would go about this is I would really think about this in the beginning. You might want to check in more frequently, right? The first 4 weeks that somebody joined your company is now reaching out, especially if it's a customer-facing role, you might want to be a bit more active in the verifying part. And it's not just to verify, it's also to just give feedback, to get context, to really understand what's going on. So if you train somebody to schedule demo calls, I would want to be on some of these calls that this rep has to demos, to schedule demo calls, to just listen to how the conversation goes, listen to what's going on, give feedback, learn. But the way that you do it frequent in the beginning and less frequent over time. So if in the first week I might want to join 4 calls, the second week maybe 2, the third 1, then I might be just joining 1 call a month, and then eventually 1 call a quarter, maybe just 1 call a year, right? But so it's not about like micromanaging somebody forever, because that's not scalable and not feasible. It's not a great experience for the person who's doing the job, right? Once I heard a few of your calls, I don't need to be in every single call. I kind of get the idea of what you're doing. But not joining any of your calls from day one is just plain stupid, right? And it's also not, even if the fraud thing is not even in question, it's not the greatest onboarding experience, because no matter how much you talk about these calls with your new employee, new team member, listening to them while it's happening is going to give you so much more context on giving valuable feedback and helping them do their job better. So trust by verify is a big one. Here's one that even happened before trust and verify. And obviously, to me, the best way to avoid having somebody that frauds you or your customers in your team is to prevent it from happening in the first place by not hiring that type of person, right? So having a really good hiring process. And one thing that we got frauded in, and I've talked about this in a prior episode, we've never had any issue with a sales team, a success team, support team, or any of that in many, many years, because I think we're doing a really good job vetting people. But the only time somebody lied to us and we had hired him and we'd found out like 2 weeks later was actually a designer, right? We'd hired a designer many years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. That person had sent in, had a great record of like good companies he had worked for. He sent in some really good work and we were excited. We had him fly into San Francisco and work with him during a day. But working with him meant he was on his laptop and then he was showing us things and we were really impressed. And then when we hired him, all of a sudden things changed. Like he would tell us he would upload the version 1 design. So first of all, he wanted much longer times to show work and we pressured him to be more iterative and more collaborative. Then he was like, okay, I'm going to upload this on Friday, the first version. Friday would come, Monday would come, and he would be like, oh, I uploaded it, I'll try again tomorrow. Tuesday would pass, Wednesday would pass. He'd be like, well, it's uploaded in my thing. And eventually we were just like, can you just screen share what you have and we'll just take pictures, right? Because since we can't find it in Dropbox, and you'd be like, all of a sudden he's sick. And like within 2 weeks, we realized something funky is going on. And then when he showed us what he had, it was totally different in quality than the stuff he was showing us during the interviewing process. And we realized after doing some research that the stuff that he showed us during the interviewing process was not his. He actually took a bunch of really good design templates that were out there and just edited them slightly to fit what we wanted him to work on, but he hadn't done any of these original designs. So he'd like basically lied to us the entire time. And we let him go really quickly, but it was a painful experience. And that taught us to be better at background checks. So we would never hire anybody anymore without talking to 2, 3, 4 employers, without even asking for a direct reference. We'll ask you for direct references, but we'll find indirect references and ask about the quality of work. And we would have found out things about him if we'd done it that way. So that would be my tip on, like, prevent that from happening by doing a bit more homework before you hire somebody. Because usually when people do fraudulent shit, they have a track record, a history of doing that, so it'll catch them. Once you hire them, you want to trust them, but in the early days, you want to verify and then go less and less frequent. I agree with that as well. Now, what happens, you know, there's different ways of let's call it the shady shit bucket, right? So there is the crass example, which is like just pure fraud, right? Somebody is faking calls or faking signatures or using fake credit cards or whatever, just like plain out lying and stealing money from either customers or you, right? So the most, maybe criminal even, the most like crass activity possible, right? That's one bucket. And obviously but there's many shades of this, right? So this is pure fraud. But there's something in between as well, right, where somebody might just be lying, but not, you know, in as crass of a way. Maybe they're telling you they've done something and they haven't yet, right, and you discover that afterwards. Or maybe one case that's popular in sales, again, where clothes has been really useful to many of our customers to detecting this, is inflating the numbers a little bit. So some reps will show that they've made 100 calls a day. But then when a founder looks at these calls, the founder realizes that the calls had many of these calls had a duration of 1 second. So it's clear that the rep would dial a number and hang up, dial a number and hang up, and the system would count the calls as like 100 dials. But you could also see that the minutes on the phone were drastically too low and kind of pick up on that, versus in some other software, some other scenario, you just wouldn't know. You would just see that a rep reported 100 calls, but you don't know that they're not real calls. Once you figure any of these scenarios out, what's the plan to action moving forward? What do? You find that one person in your company has done something like this. What do you do next, Seton?
You know, I think the first thing I would like to do in those scenarios, and I do, is I seek to understand. So I'd go to them and be like, I noticed X, Y, and Z. I'm just curious, you know, what your thought process was around doing X, Y, and Z. And then from there, it gets pretty obvious because, you know, there might be a good reason. Usually there isn't. But really, for me, that conversation is literally about letting them go, firing them, whatever extreme you want to use. That being said, there is a 5% chance, let's say maybe lower, that, like, you know, there's nothing wrong. But it's very low. But I always approach it like they didn't do anything wrong. And I just want to understand, even though I'm 99% sure, you know, I know what I need to do and I'm prepared. That being said, I think it's unfair to look at a situation, look at these things and not understand why someone did them.
Mm-hmm.
Unfair to you, not even them. It's just unfair situation to make this judgment call, even if it's awful, without understanding someone's own thought process.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons is they're human, you're human. Like, you know, none of us are aliens here. None of us are robots. Like, let's like talk through it and really get understand each other. And I think that, you know, their response is what impacts my decision more than anything else. And it's more of my decision on how I approach letting them go. Because it's unlikely that if they're doing something that grossly negligent or weird or fraudulent or whatever, you know, extreme or level of this it is, it's not cool. And if you don't understand why they did it, you're not going to understand how to prevent it in the future from other people either. That's my take on it, and how to get better at hiring and whatnot.
Sometimes, so I love when we are in disagreement, right? These episodes are fun, and I have to think about like a topic. We haven't disagreed strongly in a while, but this is a topic where it's also just fun to hear you say exactly what I would want to say next, right? So it's just like, Even using the words that I would use, just like word for That's word, good. I'm asking you the question, I'm thinking something, you say exactly
That's
the same.
That's great.
I love it. So yeah, we're very aligned in many things as well. That's no secret. But yeah, man, I mean, I would collect a lot of, I would do my homework and don't instantly react once you see just one little thing that's weird, right? Don't be emotional. Collect, do some research, do some homework, and then sit down and talk to them. And I would do it exactly the way you suggested. Don't tell them, I saw these 10 things, why are you stealing money? Why? Don't make any claims, don't make any accusations. Just say, hey, recently I noticed something that I couldn't quite understand or explain. I did a little bit more research. Here's the 4 things that I found. Can you explain this to me? Right? Just allow them to tell you what's going on, because you're right. Once in a while, you might be wrong, right? And they might have a really good explanation. And then you're going to be very happy you didn't scream at them or you didn't tell them they're liars and stealers. You're going to be like, oh shit, well, that explains everything. Now, how can we make sure that there's more context in our data so it doesn't look funky anymore? But if they can't explain themselves, or if they explain themselves in a way or excuse their behavior in a way that you don't buy and believe, I will ask you again, what do you do? Do you believe in second chances? Let's say somebody goes, you know, I'm really sorry. Yes, I had a lot of pressure at work, whatever. My uncle was sick. I didn't have gas in my car. It was raining, like whatever they have as explanations. And so I did something that's out of character. I've never done something like this before. I will never do it again. I'm super sorry. What do you do with that? Because if somebody just lies to you and acts like an asshole, it might be very easy to say you'll just let them go. But I'm curious, do you believe in second chances with somebody that maybe even you buy into the idea that this is not typical behavior? Would you give them another chance or no?
9 times out of 10, no.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it's
just 9 times out of 10. Because you don't have time for a second chance in a startup usually. You know, we're talking about startups. If it's like a larger business, there's very specific ways to handle this, right? If you're an enterprise, corporate, whatever you want to call it, or even like past 50 or 100 team members, there's very specific ways to handle this if it is not culturally correct. You know, there's a whole extreme conversation on this that I don't think we've had around like companies like Zenefits and all the fraud that came out of there.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you want to go to a different kind of extreme Uber and like the culture, that being the norm, I think that's a little different. Outside of that, though, like I don't know. It's not that people don't deserve a second chance, or I don't believe in any of that. Some things are just so extreme and not culturally aligned that like it doesn't work. And that's why I started by saying the company's your brand, you know, mm-hmm. as a founder and like CEO, whatever, executive, and even every team member. There's a brand aspect to it. And like if you are okay with the person doing that, then yeah, it's cool. There's no even second chance opportunity because that's a norm. If you're not okay with it and it's not culturally a good fit and they were willy-nilly doing it, it's very rare that they're going to change. It's very rare that a second chance is going to change anything. So 9 times out of 10, I'm not going in thinking they get a second chance. That being said, if, you know, there's something I don't understand about the situation, you know, I'm open.
I absolutely agree with you. I think that I do believe in second chances, but it doesn't mean that I need to give you a second chance, right? At this startup at this time. And there's just so much baggage, so much work and friction. When somebody's done something like this once, you will never, ever fully trust them again.